Greetings, everyone, and thank you so much for attending. My name is Samantha LeDuc. I'm the founder of LeDucTrading.com, and I can be found here under our website, so you can take a look at your convenience. Again, LeDucTrading.com. I'm a macro to micro analyst, educator, and trader, so I'm using a backdrop of a whole bunch of kind of interconnected usually silos of information that I put together to analyze the market, from macro to technical analysis to option structure, as well as intermarket, which is comparison and contrast of competing assets, as well as fundamentals and sentiment. So I'm really trying to kind of dig in to understand what the story is as it develops. And then I share that with clients, and I do it across all assets and all time frames, which means short duration chases, swing trading, which is typically a little bit longer, you know, multi-week, as well as trend, which is multi-month. So I try to really look at the whole thing and then break it down from largest time frame to shortest. I'm not doing it alone. I actually have quite a large group of contributors that help clients. So I'm trying to serve multiple masters. Basically, I've got a fabulous edge product, which is macro focused, kind of more boutique, institutional, do-it-yourself, high net worth folks that are really using macro as a backdrop. They have wealth to defend, protect, and grow. And so I have two excellent macro edge advisors. One is Craig Shapiro. He actually runs the product. And another is Jeffrey Fouvre, who is a classical trained economist. They're both prior hedge fund managers. So they really understand the needs of kind of more fixed income, focused on hedging strategies, and very much the kind of the portfolio management side of the house. My business is very much focused on serving kind of do-it-yourself investors. That's the club product. And I run a live trading room. I also provide all of my analysis as well as trade setups in a client workspace using Slack. And there's a lot of absolute kind of client engagement plus a full trading desk of contributors. So that's again where I'm synthesizing and scanning what's going on with the market, market moving news, option flow, options expiration, macro events, whether it be Powell, for example, this week, non-farm payrolls on Friday, and anything that could possibly interrupt the particular trend, which right now is bullish. And a lot of folks right now are kind of asking that question, is the top in? Is this a top, the top? And I'm saying, no, we're going to get to that. What do I say? But right now, this is just kind of a shake and bake this past week, which was very much expected. And we'll drop into kind of what my expectations are and my price predictions even. But the third product is community, and that's very much focused on newer traders. So there's more scalping involved. Typically, those who are kind of new, maybe younger, but definitely focused on momentum trading, they're very interested in this kind of day trading environment or zero DTE option trading. That's kind of a totally different focus. And because that's a focus for those who like to scalp, whether it be futures or intraday options on indices or options on equities, it really is a focus. So I have a product just related to that with some fabulous live stage moderators and traders that post everything that they can see and work to support clients who are doing that type of time frame chasing. So my specialty is more of this intermediate trader. Okay, so if that's you, you're going to understand this a little bit better, I think, versus the edge product. It's definitely more hedge fund styled, and the community product, which is much more active trading versus what I call the sweet spot of active trading and investing, where it's positioning for a durable theme that can last several weeks, not just several hours or days, but definitely several weeks. And to do that, I come up with these durable themes. Sometimes they're based on a macro backdrop of like oil and dollar, definitely the yields. I'm very much focused on the direction of yields, but it's also could be durable themes as it relates to, you know, what we have right now in this cycle, which is, of course, everyone talks AI. But while they're talking about AI, they oftentimes miss a lot of under the radar value plays, which are just hot fire flames that nobody's paying attention to, but they're actually a lot easier, lower lower volatility, and boring can be very profitable. So I tend to pick up kind of sector rotation themes and present those to clients, and I'll show you examples of those. And then lastly, I really, really focus, because I'm looking at the macro and all the time and doing my intermarket, I really focus on trying to time volatility. So there are particular triggers that I can see coming into the market that can identify when it is a very great time to go short on a chase timeframe, or to hedge a portfolio, or just to really kind of dig in and say, hey, this is going to be 2-3 months of a pullback. Let's actually close these longs and go short, and then finding those best instruments. So in my estimation, everyone has to pick their time frame where they're most comfortable. And that's really what I'm looking for, is when is volatility going to come in and interrupt that, that time frame. So my big kind of focus that I like to say is, you know, I'm a volatility expert because I raise teenagers. No, that's not it. It's because I see that the market rotates in dollars, and they go from sector to sector to sector. And then when they want to leave short-term, de-risk, then we have volatility. Anyway, I'm very focused on lots of things that are related to option structure to try and time when the volatility comes into play. And then other times, it's just my experience, like a pattern. For example, I had posted recently that I saw, hold on a second, I got to find my Slack stuff that's coming up here. Yeah, right. So on Friday, I had said, hey, gold is a tell. We're going to have an interruption to this bullish move. We had just broken out in NASDAQ and stocks looked oh so sweet. And by the way, they have done extremely well, right? We had a gorgeous, gorgeous advance in 2023 of 54% in NASDAQ. And January, February saw another 12.5%. But there's a reason why it got a little bit too euphoric. We had this combination of what the options market coming together and forming this kind of crash up scenario. So while I was studying that very, very carefully, I noticed on Friday, we had a very sharp gold spike. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is the market's way of telling NASDAQ to slow down. And sure enough, we pulled back, you know, 2.9%, you know, into this 21-day bounce that we had actually today. So let me just kind of show you that so I can. So let's just use this as an example. But here was the gold spike that kind of came in, right? That was Friday, Monday, Tuesday, today. And I said that spike on Friday was going to be a little interruption here to our planned continuation move higher in NASDAQ. And sure enough, we pulled back a little, you know, 2.9%. And then everyone's like, oh, no, you know, the trend is over. No. So the NASDAQ is actually very, very bullish. SPY as well. Small caps are doing well. Diamonds, which now has, by the way, Amazon, which was added to Diamonds. So this is kind of like a mini NASDAQ in play. But there isn't a breakdown of the trend. This is still, and you can see hopefully that this is a weekly time frame. This is a daily time frame. This is an hourly time frame. You can see we have all kinds of shake and bake on an intraday, depending on your time frame. We definitely have some resumption, I believe, of a pullback, not just because Powell is speaking this week, but because gold is very, very loudly saying it's getting too euphoric. So I talk about this in that write-up that I was just saying, but then I said, hey, I'm still bullish. Just because we're having some get very, very nervous about this expansion. By the way, this is our client Slack workspace. I still had put out there back in, January, before the Fed met, okay? And QRA happens to be the U.S. Treasury Secretary Yellen does a quarterly refunding announcement. And it basically helps identify how they are going to fund this deficit spending that keeps moving higher, right? So we just had $1 trillion added to the deficit over 100 days. It's basically up to Yellen to fund that with bonds, longer duration notes, or T-bills, which are shorter duration. So yes, I track that type of stuff to see whether we're going to have liquidity continue in the market, which would support this very bullish call that I made, right? I made that call before FOMC in January. And as you can see, we definitely hit the Qs 444. In fact, last week, we hit a high of 446.58. So it is not unusual for the market to kind of pull back, do a shake and bake, you know, really test the resolve of these kind of last in, first out bulls, and then resume higher, unless we get a macro trigger to kind of interrupt the flows that are very bullish. So let me talk about those flows a little bit, because I started doing that. And then I wanted to show you that gold spike. But I basically on Friday said, okay, the crash up scenario is on hold while we have this gold spike. And we'll talk about what that means, or at least my interpretation of that gold spike and what that means. But this is really the option market that we're in, right? So basically, I've been talking about this crash up market, and I've got my macro reasons to be bullish, but this is kind of the option structure where you have a whole bunch of this manic call buying. And if anyone who trades options, you know how incredibly bullish this AI theme has been and has helped support and keep a bid in the market. So manic call buyers are chasing these upside moves. It's actually forcing what's called delta hedging in dealers. They're the market makers. They're the ones that are absolutely supporting this bid by taking the other side of these call buyers. And then they have to, in essence, buy shares of the underlying as the market moves higher. So in and of itself, that isn't unusual. That's absolutely kind of standard operating procedure. But then on top of that, you have a whole cadre of participants that are selling calls. They're called overwriters. And these are the folks that basically have sold calls as hedges. They got some big portfolio, management duties, and/or they have core positions as investors, and they kind of use a caller, which is they sell calls against their core position. And then they basically are kind of forced in this whole ramp higher. They've been forced to cover or buy back as we melt up into those strikes, right? So used to be call sellers would be rewarded for volatility, but there has been no volatility. It has moved sideways to lower. So now they're actually having to buy back their calls as we crash up into those strikes. Hopefully that makes sense. If you know options, you know it makes sense that this is very, very structurally bullish. But then there's another whole component, or I should say contingency in the market, that is very focused on these put sellers. So selling puts is bullish. And they have just been basically coming in and saying, this is an easy trade. This is actually very productive because I don't mind owning it if it goes down a few dollars, but I'm able to collect that income. And by the way, market just continues to move higher. So the old days of just buying stock and holding on, it looks like you're smart, but the real energy has been in creating this backdrop where dealers are literally dealing with manic call buyers chasing upside moves, these call sellers that then have to cover as we crash up into those strikes. And that whole thing intersects with put sellers that are basically forcing dealers who are on the other side of that trade to buy shares to hedge their position. It's incredibly bullish. So we would have to have a macro reason to upset that apple cart, okay? And speaking of Apple, all right, so I don't know if you probably saw recently that this has been a really ugly chart. This is a weekly, again, remember, daily, hourly. Apple is down over, I did the math, hold on. Got to find it though. Hold on. Is over 9%, is down 9% since the first of the year. Everybody gives so much grief to small caps or I should say the Russell 2000 Index, because it basically comprises a whole bunch of small companies that don't have a chance competing with, you know, Apple and Tesla and Google and NVIDIA and all the rest. But the truth, because they have 30 to 40% of what we affectionately call zombies, unprofitable, what have you. But there are also a whole bunch of good ones in here that are doing okay. So small caps are actually up 3% this year, while Apple is down 9% this year. Tesla is down, 28% this year, just from January 1st, by the way. So that kind of gets to the point that I'm getting to, which is we still have a bullish backdrop, even if Apple and Tesla are failing miserably. And we've obviously been helped because of NVIDIA and SMCI and, you know, that AI sentiment, which was very similar to the 1990s, late 90s with the internet theme. But that's not enough. FOMO isn't enough. We also need this whole kind of crash up scenario with the option structure and with funds coming in and positioning, which they have. And they're really fully loaded long in those tech stocks. So most likely we get a little rotation into some of the value. And that's basically my main premise. But my point back here on the FOMC day, right before, I should say, Fed day in January, was that my best swag after a burst of volatility, which we got, by the way, likely from confused market as Yellen issues slightly more longer duration bonds over T-bills. She did, by the way. And Fed intonates more normative cuts in the future. They did, by the way, that we would continue to move higher. 5340 is a price target, 472 for the Qs, and small caps would basically do just fine. So I've kind of already positioned that I don't think this is a top or even the top. I think it's just a little, you know, shake and bake. But everyone has their opinion. This is mine. Now, the other kind of point of this is I'm not, you know, just putting this out here going, okay, we've got some speculation here that momentum stocks might be fading. Where do they rotate? I really, really think that this is a rotation into everything else where we can get some nice support. Now, I've done interviews before. You know, I've done Market Watch and CNBC Pro and Bloomberg. Most recently, I had, right here. In February, I had a Bloomberg interview separate from a Market Watch interview where I talked about this tech concentration risk, right? So we already had 54% advance in NASDAQ, 12.5% so far in January, February of 2024. And this has definitely helped indices and it has outperformed value, no question. But now is when money could rotate into value as tech is extended. So it's like literally what I wrote and said. And one thing that I find is very, very helpful is this, I'm going to show you a little bit different, is a rotation, growth to value rotation, this right here. When I did this for Bloomberg, I was basically showing them this chart, which they recreated, of course, using their own Bloomberg terminal. But the point is, it had just peaked at the November 2021 top, which is right before NASDAQ, you know, rolled over 35%. Now, in January 2023, we had the January effect, and then we got a whole bunch of, you know, 1 year ago in March of 2023, we had the bank stop, a backstop by Fed and Treasury. And then, of course, we had in May, you can see it right here, massive, massive NVIDIA. So AI became all the rage. Well, fast forward since that interview and that also at Market Watch, we have actually started to roll over. So this rotation is showing me that growth is moving into value. Value is doing better. And that is likely to continue. So that's good, right? It's good. Are we extended? Massive. There's no question about it. This is NYSE. This is the composite. It's not the Russell, you know, as it relates to 2000, it's everything. By the way, Russell 1000 is an even better one to take a look at because it's the best of the Russell 2000, for lack of a better word. Anyway, are we extended? Absolutely. And that's why even in NYSE, not even in NASDAQ composite, why folks are getting very, very nervous because we've taken out the highs definitively. It feels like we're in a bubble. but we're really not. So I don't contend that we're in a bubble. I actually think this is a pretty bullish backdrop. Doesn't mean we can't have a macro theme to punch us, you know, in the face. But right now we need a macro event trigger to really, really start to roll over. So right now, the gold spike was the reason for the season. And I wrote about this for clients on Monday and basically said, careful, this could actually be a very good reason why we're going to start to trigger some more shake and bake. It is moving too high. When gold moves too high, it is typically one of the reasons why they start to signal risk off. Sometimes gold is used as a currency. So I don't want to just kind of dismiss this as it's one indicator. It's not. Gold is a chameleon. Sometimes it's used as a currency, like when China buys gold in exchange for dollars, they hand over their dollars. Sometimes it's used as a commodity. We all know about gold jewelry. It's also used in industrial applications. That's very much a supply-demand component. Sometimes it's used as an inflation hedge, which is tied to real yields inversely for those who are into the macro side of things. And sometimes it's just plain old crash protection. It's a rotation from risk off on a macro event. So I'm still of the opinion that this is definitely, definitely worthy of keeping our eyes on, but I don't see otherwise market structure underneath that says we are falling and we can't get up type of thing. It just looks like we're definitely going to have some compression here in the growth sector. And that would allow for value to continue to come up off the ground. So in a nutshell, I really do like the prospects, do this, of a growth to value rotation. That's spelled wrong. So here's an example. When is the last time, right? I don't know if you've noticed, but we had a really, really big flat chart in the Russell 2000. I think I showed you. Well, when is the last time SPY made all-time highs while the Russell 2000 was still in a bear market? You remember how this just recently, Russell is trying to get out of a bear market while SPY and NASDAQ has been shooting higher? It's never happened. So the next three closest instances were followed by a rally higher over the next year with the Russell outperforming and joining SPY at all-time highs. So these are the closest back in 1999, 91, 95, where we had a 20%, you know, divergence. And that's kind of an intermarket analysis study. Long story short, we have some really, really big laggards out there, small caps, IPOs, XRT is retail, and also XBI is biotech. So I'm very fortunate because within biotech, so first of all, I've got macro managers, I've got active traders, advanced option futures, you got it, you name it. But I also have a biopharma analyst who has just absolutely nailed every analysis on biotech from CRISPR to weight loss. It's just been impressive. And this has really helped our XBI trade. And so then within it, of course, there's Eli Lilly and VKTX. These are actual positions that we put on as trends or swings, not just day chasing, right? That support this theme of it's time for biotech and select retail and select tech IPOs and select Russell 2000 plays to come up off the bottom. And they have been very, very profitable. So I just want to kind of point that out. This theme is still working. So if you saw my Market Watch interview, you'll know that I recommended those. Same thing with Bloomberg. I still see this support for a rotation, money flow and rotation from growth to value. And basically, this is my feeling why we don't have the concentration risk only as the play in AI and Bitcoin, for example. Bitcoin is now back to its 28-month high. Gold is 5% above its 3-year high. So whichever you prefer, the point is we definitely have a lot of speculative assets that are moving higher, but we also have a lot of kind of left for dead value moving higher. And that's really what I pick up and then present to clients as chase, swing, or trend timeframes. So now what I'm looking at, if this theme has legs, right? I don't see this as a top. I don't see this I see definitely a speculation from, you know, that liquidity is abundant in the system as long as there isn't a macro trigger. Of course, that depends if we get a new sheriff in town come November. But the overarching kind of comparison that folks are making to the 1990s, some of it's pretty accurate. I put this back in mid-November. So mid-November, I literally said the market is looking very 1999-esque. And then in mid-January, I said, you know what? I think it's actually 1995-esque potential. So this feel, right, where you have a lot of the AI FOMO, it feels very similar to the internet excitement. There was a lot of VC money that came in back then. But venture capital has been sitting on the sidelines because the peak was 2021 and then everything crashed, right? So nothing has moved. 21, 22, 23, now 24, they're starting to move up again. So I do see this as kind of a potential for a multi-year run similar to 1995 when there were lots of IPOs taken public. It was definitely disruptive tech back then. It took years for them to become applicable. And that was why we had the 2000, you know, peak crash in March of 2000 after a 100% speculative bubble. But I'm just looking at this going, I think they're going to be a little bit more careful, especially since we have a very different backdrop of high yields that are going to stay high, wage inflation that's going to stay sticky. So if this is going to work as I can right now see it with my mind's eye, then obviously we need to maintain the same kind of backdrop of macro as far as policies. That can always change. The liquidity right now is still abundant. We have a very strong speculation sentiment in certain sectors, but a lot of others are looking phenomenal, really. Oh, building materials. Waste management, things that folks aren't paid any attention to. And it does look like this has the potential to kind of turn into a, not only this rally will be broader, but could it turn into the everything rally? So not just tech. You've heard about the everything bubble. What if we get actually a resumption of an everything rally and stuff off the bottom starts actually, you know, moving higher? So that's why my focus right now is not on joining the bandwagon of everyone saying this is the top or this is a top. I know the macro obstacles really well. Actually, I would say really, really well. I see this as dangerous to short because of fiscal dominance as a backdrop. I already came out very, very loud, if you will, back in November of 2023 and talked about how the dollar, the US dollar, has likely peaked and it has worked out extremely well, right? I've called already the bonds perfectly, like August 2020, bonds are done going up. It continues to be short the rip in longer duration bonds. So dollar and bonds and oil are already I'm very connected or in sync with those. I'm trying to find the next reason why we would actually roll over with size, a macro trigger of size, other than we really start to see some solid breakdown in the NVIDIAs of the world, right? So that is in a kind of, you know, basic backdrop. I wanted to get into questions as well, because I love talking about individual stocks and sectors and macro themes. But this is really my underlying research, is that I don't see a breakdown in breadth. I don't see a breakdown in net. In other words, net selling hasn't picked up. The options market hasn't turned bearish yet. The fundamental picture is overvalued, but we're overvalued and, you know, overbought, but not broken. So we need a macro trigger. And I have definitely talked about that and written about that. And I want to show you that in just a second. But I get oftentimes asked, what's your time frame? And everyone has to define their own time frame. I saw, you know, some are just day trading. You're really focused on something that's 1 to 3 days, right? That's a chase in my book. Swings are, you know, 1 to 3 weeks, and they can actually turn into multi-month affairs. Trends are, they start out as, I expect them to last a few months. And if they're doing everything right, they can last a few years. So everyone has to kind of define their own time frame. For me, I'm just looking at 2024 into the election. So just remember that my time frame might be very different from yours. But that's it. I wanted to kind of open up some questions and then show you some trades and see if there is something you want me to size up. But for sure, the market backdrop is something I have talked about on Twitter. So you can see, if you follow me on Twitter, right, you've got a few places to follow me, by the way. You've got my website, leductrading.com, and that of my contributors. You have a Twitter website where I'm kind of posting some macro ideas and some whatever. It's kind of random, but nonetheless, it is one of those where I started talking about concentration risk back in mid-November. SPY was only 4,500 then. So this is really tough to short, even if you're very negative on the government and with good reason. It's very, very tough to short when you have a lot of money coming in. Okay, we're talking massive amounts of big money, and you're in a situation of fiscal dominance, which is the government will continue to keep printing. So fiscal stimulus, fiscal dominance, fiscal deficits, it's all very, very much liquidity boosting for equities. And then I followed up in mid-January and I said, I'm doubling down, like literally. I added a lot of swings in mid-November. That didn't suck. I am adding a lot more in mid-January. So it was feeling very much 1999-esque, and those trades did extremely well. And then right before the FOMC, you know, I said, literally, I'm doubling down. That was January 23rd, and talked about how I still don't think that this market is bearish. And then I started talking about upside crash risk, which I've written about before. Unless and until we get a macro trigger to disrupt the flows, there is more risk of an upside crash than downside. So we did get gold to spike, and that was Friday, Monday, Tuesday, today. That's definitely something that bears watching. But for right now, this is very much the reason why markets continue going up and to the right. We've got debt up 47%, which is all of that deficit spending. It's helping economic growth nominally. It's helping wages. Wage growth is helping the consumers spend. Corporations pass prices along. And with it, we get inflation that is compounded, and it's up 20% on a compounding basis. This is the reason why assets continue to inflate. And it will change when we have a reason for it to change. But I just want to kind of point your attention to that. I do have, just for those who want to follow for free, this is my macro to micro Substack. And I have got in here my market thoughts, which I just kind of talked about, timing of most recent volatility surge on the gold spike Friday. Why is gold really important, for example? And I also can showcase my macro advisor, edge manager, Craig Shapiro, or Jeffrey, or a whole bunch, because I have some fabulous contributors that you may not even know about. But this is just, I'm blessed. I really, really am. Craig and his timely macro event risk analysis, also fixed income positioning. Jeffrey, my goodness, his focus on precious metals, fiscal dominance, and then a lot of arb trades, if you're kind of fancy into that. Archna, who's actually presented here before, we've worked together for 5 years. She just is a killer on the earnings trades, and specifically advanced option trades, which she teaches clients or helps them kind of structure. Michael, who's my live trading room coordinator, does a morning report, a pre-market review, and he's very focused on scalping ES levels. He's excellent. And Rithika, Elliott Wave Analysis. This is a popular form of technical analysis. And she's really a live trading room moderator, but also very client engaged, stock option trade setups. Alex, I had mentioned, is my biopharma deep dive. Really, I've got clients here and folks that have been clients that have transitioned to full-time contributors. I'm very, very, very fortunate that I've got a great team. Tiffany does gamma squeeze analysis and option trade setups. I will also kind of highlight what they do and how they do it and what they're trading. But for the most part, you can see all that we cover by going right in and checking out for a limited time. Every morning, I do a live trading room for 2 hours. I cover everything, chase, swing, and trend, macro, micro. And this is where we are posting the recorded sessions. So the live is 9 to 11. Those are for club members who want to engage with questions. It's also live streaming for the community members. They can't engage, but they can see me size up the trades, like this morning crowd for a very nice short after earnings, that type of stuff, to updates on swing longs like eBay or Celsius or what have you. Setting up new trades, the whole thing, closing, what worked, what didn't. So basically this trading room is going to be recorded and then posted for Substack to review. And you can get the whole kind of shebang here of also my training. And then summaries, Chase summary. This is the detailed Michael, my live trading room moderator. We cover a lot. So he covers it. Anyway, we're doing this for those who want to get a better feel for kind of how I am doing analysis and helping clients set up their trades. So again, recorded live trading room on Substack, my market thoughts, as well as videos, trade of the week. Check it out. It's a brand new, product we just launched on January 1st, and it's been well received. I'm very grateful. This, for example, is a perfect example of my biopharma analyst, Alexander Kenton, and he recommended CRISPA, and then we kind of jumped on that one as a trend and as a swing trade. Here's his bio, and here's his very beautiful review. That's all him. Like, I'm just posting word for word, all him. But he got us into that trade early, and so we've been able to benefit greatly from subject matter experts, and you can take a look and see how this is out, but it covers everything I want it to cover. So anyway, that is my website and obviously the Substack. You caught me on Twitter, and then you hit me up here if you have any questions, but I just wanted to kind of identify for you why I think this fear about the market advance being done is a little bit over its skis. And I think we can definitely have some shake and bake. But long story short, I did a Substack post back on February 19th, and I said, we still need a macro trigger. That's it. The swings are doing great. And by the way, I haven't closed them unless they had a reason to be closed. But the only reason I will close them is if I think this thesis is wrong. In other words, if I think I'm going to have more than a little bit of shake and bake, but we actually have some turbulence ahead that's going to trigger outsized volatility and de-risking, then I will close those swings. No question about it. But in the meantime, I'm still waiting and watching to see how we do around quarterly options expiration. That's definitely my focus. March 15th is coming up next week. When we typically have a big options expiration, like on the quarterly, we typically do have some big, shake and bake. But the trend is still in play, unless or until we get a big macro move. PBOC yuan devaluation, that's over there in China. That would be very tough to time, and it would be a surprise. Bank of Japan, rate hike normalization. Trust me, I track this one like a hawk. Term premia, that's a spike basically that would happen on longer duration bonds. So for example, if you were to see the US confiscating the Russian assets and then actually using them, they've already confiscated, but actually parlaying them into, Ukraine support so they could fight Russia, that would absolutely spike term premia and yields would spike higher. An oil spike, if it sticks, there isn't really a lot of impetus here. Anyway, the point is the next event risk is coming up April 30th because the FOMC meeting of March 20th isn't really expected to be that market moving. But I can tell you, whoever is chosen as the president will be, if it's the same president, will have the same policy, so it's known. If it's a new president, even Trump, because it's not 2016 anymore, we have a lot different inflation backdrop. So a lot of the policies would be very, very inflationary. And believe it or not, this RFK independent guy, his odds are growing. I know it's shocking. But the point is, we don't know unknown, black, gray, white swan. We do not know. We didn't have any government shutdown surprise. We almost never do. So that isn't really a big deal. And then big picture, we've got no Fed cuts planned in the near future unless we have a bank crisis again, right? So we do have New York Community Bank share plummeting and needs intervention. And that is absolutely a risk. But big picture, I've got big reasons to remain bullish. And I highlight those. I've already talked about the kind of the one reason I am remaining bullish, which is this option backdrop, but that can change. We can absolutely have a really strong pullback, but otherwise, it is very, very bullish in that funds have been deploying capital, right? We're not up 12.5% this year in NASDAQ for nothing. It's not just AI FOMO. They're actually deploying capital across sectors. There's more than just money going into NVIDIA and SMCI, for example. They are betting on rate cuts that lower the cost of funding. We definitely have had a rate of change in falling or low inflation while wages have stayed steady or grown. And that has helped, again, consumers absorb higher prices, so they keep spending. Real estate has held its value. Productivity gains have absolutely helped, and that's key. So you've got inflation, wages, and productivity that have to be measured. All three of those, that you can't use them in isolation. You have to do that together. And so far, rate of change of inflation is falling. That's good, although it looks like it's turned. Wage growth is strong, which is good. Doesn't look like it's turned. And productivity is absolutely good. So anyway, this helps support corporate earnings. So this is very much about assets staying firm, right? Not losing value in like real estate, as well as earnings growth story still supported. And why would it be supported? Because they are able to get their prices paid, right? Consumers will support the prices. You can use all kinds of anecdotal evidence on one-off cases, but collectively, on aggregate, productivity gains have been very strong. Bonds have stayed lower. And there's, until that changes, we don't have a macro trigger. And then you add in all of that AI, right? That's the hot theme du jour, like the internet was back in the 90s. And you have rising fiscal spending, right? I mean, we literally just increased the deficit $1 trillion in 100 days. So we have an economic growth backdrop, even if it's fake, even if it's fake. Even if they're hiding treasury, unrealized treasury losses on bank balance sheets, even if they're printing money with no intention of paying it back. I know how dangerous that is. I get it. But for right now, if you're still in the market, you've got other reasons to be bullish. This is very hard to trade debasement. So don't panic until we have a reason to. Anyway, we've got also contained energy costs, gasoline. When it spikes, it's a threat, but right now it hasn't. Energy costs have been, White House policies have been to contain it, and they have, and that tempers inflation expectations. If it goes up, it's a whole nother story. De-dollarization, oh my God, the articles that have been written about this, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Guess what? It's not so bad. So falling dollar, of course it's bad. We can't, devalue our dollar into economic prosperity, but it is short-term bullish. And more to the point, local currencies that actually exchange with each other outside of the US dollar will help lower the trade deficit in the US, which will lead to the government budget deficit shrinking. These are economic principles that most don't think about, but it really does collectively add to my macro reasons for staying bullish. Always looking out one side of my eye to see what they're going to mess up next. But honestly, we still have buybacks. We still have all kinds of financial engineering. And they're seen, even if we don't like them, they're crooked as the day is, can be, but they're seen as features, not bugs. We still have gamma squeezes. We still have dispersion trading. If you don't know what that is, look it up. It's very much a structure of options support for the market. And we definitely have suppressed volatility. And as long as the market has suppressed volatility, I'm talking sideways to lower, the indices can grind higher. So, last but not least, you also have a central bank coordinated effort globally, not just White House and Treasury and Fed, to make sure the market doesn't blow up because they want their tax receipts. How's that? All right. Opinion on oil, energy stocks, and precious metals. Okay. What's your time frame? What's your time frame? So I'm going to bring up a chart. This is gold, right? Everyone knows it. It's like, woohoo, it's so exciting. Biggest price ever, you know, above the 2020 freak out and of course the 2022. Anyway, this is bullish. There isn't really anything that isn't bullish about gold right now. So gold looks good. Silver is just getting its groove on. Silver has SLV, just using that, or do you want me to use continuous contract? Anyway, silver has a hard time going down because it is, you know, pretty industrially in demand. And this big red line is basically keeping SLV from falling too far. Every time it does, it gets snapped back very, very quickly. But it's still sideways. So it really hasn't taken off yet as far as silver, but it looks very perky, right? It looks very busy from intraday time frame to this very strong support bounce above the 200 continuation, but it chops about a lot. Silver's the kind you kind of have to hold your breath on a little bit to play that. So not crazy at all about palladium or platinum, but I will say XME, which is metals and mining ETF, has also a very nice looking start to a move higher. So this one was one of my recommended ones back in November. I literally had a list of all the dollar beneficiaries. In other words, I had a very firm belief that the dollar would fall. The title was US Dollar Has Likely Peaked. And I did a podcast with Roger Hearst and made my whole case. And it's worked. It has absolutely worked. So this did a great job. This was one of the beneficiaries around, along with a whole bunch of companies that derive revenue, right, from abroad. And they benefit from the currency exchange when the dollar is falling. So this is now setting back up again. So I like the whole XME metals and mining space. Silver, gold. Gold is more of a trend trade. Silver, like I said, is trying to figure itself out to get and keep going. Oil is in the category of not allowed to go up. So let me just show you what I mean here. I have an oil trader, and I'm very fortunate that I have an oil trader because he trades and advises companies on the physical. And then specifically, when there's something noteworthy, then we get into it, right? Okay, so here's the dollar. Hold on, I'm looking for the oil. It's bonds. There's gold. Oh, there it is. All right, so this is oil's in the category pretty much with dollar and yields, but oil is definitely in the category of not allowed to go up. It also doesn't really have a lot of open interest to spike higher, even on production cuts. So, or even unfortunately, when we have terrorist attacks and such, it definitely gets tapped back down. So that it's kind of the short, the rip. Now, I will say I had call it lucky or good, whatever, but I had a thesis back in March of 2021, and I wrote about it. And I said, oil as an inflation hedge. And then I wrote about it again in October of 2021. I forget where this was, this time frame. And I said, if we stay above 65, we could double within a year. So I basically had this time frame in mind, and we literally doubled to 130 exactly. But as soon as we broke down, Robert just reminded me, it's not allowed to go up. They don't want to have this, you know, out of control headwind. It also drives inflation expectations. So there really just isn't a lot of energy in oil, the underlying, let alone, you know, nat gas is, you know, just a widow maker. The crack spread has been very productive for those who follow refiners. But as crude is concerned, WTIC, there are lots of minuscule little moves, but nothing sizable. However, I do like the energy plays when we have rotation. So like the XLE, right? So I just kind of showed you the XME, which is metals and mining. It's so far, it has a thumb, right? Over, it's not allowed to go up either. But this is the one sector that would absolutely fire higher with new policy. So in other words, if Trump was to come in. So I don't think oil would fire higher, but I think that these kind of oversold, that's not the right way. These, I'm going to call them right now, fairly valued energy and gas companies would do a lot better. So I don't know if that helps, but energy stocks. Yeah, all those portfolios are for clients. So I can kind of show you that. It's open. They're here. Trends open, trends closed. I also have fave ideas that are doing really well. Swings open, swing closed. So basically, and I have these themed watch lists. So in other words, remember the dollar thing that I had? I'll show you. Like back in November, website is, we're getting a new website end of March. Can't wait. All right. So here is, that's Alex's, oh, where is it? All right. I got to ask. Very curious. All right. So this is what I meant. These were trends. These are ideas that I have basically posted for clients, and a lot of them were the dollar, and they've done really, really well. I'd love to show you the themed watch list, but it has disappeared. The dollar one is gone now. That's my alerts going off. So let me get to the next question, which is reshoring is also inflationary, but it takes a while. Takes a while. Yes, CapEx will be very beneficial both for, industrial as well as tech. And you nailed it. Yep. Devaluation is good for exports and balance of trade. Yep. 100%. The market's not going to, very good. Metals or miners. Oh, no, Tesla. No, Tesla. yet I'm not, you have to tell me more about your time frame for this. This was a recommended short when it hit this trend line at 263. So it really, really over-delivered. Did not expect it actually to go past 200. And it shot lower, had an anemic bounce, and has since rolled over. Toyota was a trend long idea back from June of 2023 on two reasons. One, three reasons. One, I had this thesis called stocking value rotation on June 1st, and I really liked Toyota as a trade. And then in April, I got excited about Japan, and I liked Toyota. Where's the April? Nope, I'm in the wrong, No, April this year. I mean, April of 2023, whatever. I got excited about Toyota for in April of 2023 for a play on Japan. And then we did the research and actually put together the fact that this was a hybrid play of great conviction and was going to trounce EV. So in fact, under in my Substack, you will find a great write-up. Here's BTU. That's a trend long. Here it is, Toyota. So if you're interested to find out why I was very, very, very into this trend long, you can have a look. How's that? In other words, it was TM long and Tesla short, because I believe very much trade the hype, invest in value. All right. So I wanted to show you something because I don't know how much time we have left, but it's only 2 minutes. So I'm going to do this. All right. I have on my list of contributor desk, right? Some fabulous, fabulous analysts. And I want you to know about it because this is just, I'm proud that I have brought up and encouraged women in the like this kind of voice of woman. I want other women to come into trading and finance. So just as kind of a reminder that I have a great bench, right? But Tiffany, Rithika, Archna, these are fun, and myself, of course, but we have got a balanced bench of analyst educators and traders. I am very much a proponent for women in trading and finance, especially Women's History Month is a great time to remind that we're doing gangbusters. And in fact, the economy could grow another 20% if we just elevated women out of this, income inequality. So this is the offer that we have for this conference that Anca and David have put together. 3 months. Big savings and access to all of my live trading room, recordings, portfolios, including all of my contributors, their trades, analysis, education. I hope very much that you'll seriously consider it. And then you'll find your spot of who you like to trade the, follow the most within our club offering. But I'm available if you have questions, comments. Engagement. I get some of my best ideas actually from my live trading room. In fact, this morning I was asked about TMO and I said, that's a gorgeous chart. I mean, I really like this. It's diagnostics and research. It is the largest player in diagnostics and research. So I love it when the leaders lead and it's breaking out. I'm like, I love, thank you very much. Anyway, the point is, I'm excited when I have engagement with clients, especially when they have subject matter expertise. And I have a lot of that in my trading room. So we share. It's very, very, very profitable. Let me just put it that way. So thank you very much, David and Anca, for inviting me. And congratulations, everyone, for participating all the way through. I hope I didn't discourage you from trading your own course. If you see the market is bullish, stick with it, respect your stops,
And I look forward to working with you.